The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I do love that part where just before the duel, Bill Skarsgård, who's been talking about this dude's daughter the entire movie.
Oh my God.
He's like, just as soon as he's like, your daughter, fuck you. You know?
Welcome to Recotopia, a happy home for recommended movies, shows, and music from two people you can definitely trust. Trustability varies by region, no guarantees implied. Now, here are your hosts, Chris Atkinson and Jeremy Scott.
You come here thinking there is a way out of this world for you, Mr. Wick. There is not.
All right, everybody, welcome to Recotopia episode 58. This is going to, the big recommend is going to be John Wick 4. It's one of those that we do that we don't know whether it's going to be good or not when we go and watch it. Like last year, nobody thought Ambulance would be good. And guess what? We were all wrong.
Yeah, I sat here and wept about Ambulance.
Yes, you
that
did.
Literally
you
happened.
Did. Absolutely. But I get the sense everybody had a good time in John Wick 4 last night. I don't know. Maybe some of you didn't like it. I'm not sure. Anyway, I would like to acknowledge the chat, even though this time we don't actually get to look at the chat. We're not looking at chat, can't see anything. But welcome, chat, and welcome, Sin Week members, for coming out here who saw John Wick 4 with us at the Hollywood 27. Theater number 25. Jeremy and I know it well. Jeremy's still drinking coffee, still waking up.
Yes.
So, I want to get to everybody here. So, like, let's say, we've got with us today, we've got Ian Whittington.
Hello.
We've got Daniel Gardoso. We've got Aaron Dyson.
Hi, Hosen,
we've got Danae Hughes.
Hello.
We got Jonathan Wiggins.
Hello, hello.
We got Jeremy Scott. And I am Chris Atkinson, and I'm going to go ahead and start on the end here. I'm going to let you wake up over there, Jeremy. Ian, tell us what you thought about John Wick 4.
John Wick is a movie. I'm not doing a synopsis, am I? I had a great time. I really, really, really enjoyed it. I think this time, and then he goes into a negative. I think this time I had more trouble with the, let's say, line readings that were
in this movie.
They seem to be extra John Wick-y.
Yes.
We may have jumped the shark on line delivery here. It was, I just imagine.
I thought I was the only one who thought this. No, by the way.
I'm ready.
I'm like gonna need a gun.
It was almost Shatner.
Was he William Shatner? Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. There's a lot of
Neve
Shatner
Campbell,
going
William
on.
Shatner.
Yeah.
And it's not like he had a lot of lines. But let's be honest, people, we're not here for the lines.
Nope.
We're here for the absolute batshit gunnery, the Kevlar lining skin suit that everyone wears, the incredible one shots, the inventive ways to kill people with stairs, and about seven Bond villains that are better than the last seven Bond villains that we've actually seen. So yeah, overall, it's exactly what I think people enjoy about the Fast and Furious movies, but for me, I actually had a good time. Yeah, I loved it.
All right. Daniel, what did you think about this?
I enjoyed it quite a bit as well. A little bit what Ian said about the John Wick line readings, just because I don't remember them. He was kind of like... it was kind of like Mad Max for me, where like I didn't really care if he said anything, but everyone else I think had like great lines. So I think that it counterbalances, especially Donnie Yen's one-liners.
Yes. Oh my goodness,
one in particular. Enjoyable.
Yeah,
loved it. And I am probably on the lower end of like the John Wick fans up here today, and I have to say that it kind of blew
Danae's
me away
up here. So.
No. Yeah. Maybe I'm up on the second rung. I don't know. I had a great time.
Yep. Aaron Dicer.
By the end of this recording, will be the one that everybody thinks hates this movie. And so I'm going to state right off the front that I do not hate this movie.
Fuck you!
This is my favorite John Wick movie since the first. I have this, I think, currently in my mind slotted at number two, and I'll get into reasons for that. The cognitive dissonance I always have with this movie, and it's getting worse, is the gunplay. The gunplay, like, I get so distracted by how cool it is and just in the real world how anti-gun I am. Mm-hmm. And so there's, like, this real cognitive dissonance thing that happened and gets very distracting mm-hmm. for me. Once I get past that, there's a lot of entertainment. There's a lot of cool ideas with the action. But the action has also never been my favorite part of the series. My favorite part of the series, probably, especially the first one, storytelling, then world building, then action. Action's never been like the thing that gets me juiced for a movie. And the storytelling is better in this than it has been in the last two. There's a real interesting, I think beautiful story about two men who are kind of on the same journey but at cross purposes. And when the movie focuses on what I think are the two central characters and what they're going through, I think it really kind of sings. I think there's some really interesting, meaningful, deep stuff with what they're going through about what do I value in life, where is my priority, and what happens when two things or people I love, you know, come face to face. And at its heart, Wick has been about this idea of the loss of people close to us and how that impacts our world and what we see in our world and how we, you know, interact with people who may be responsible for that. Revenge is also not something I connect to personally. It's not something, when I see it as a driving force in a movie, it doesn't speak to me in the way that maybe it speaks to a lot of people. But what does speak to me is the value of those close relationships and their importance. So there's a lot more of that stuff here than there has been in 2 and 3, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And so because of that, I think it's my second favorite Wick movie. So overall, I have a lot of mixed feelings. Mm-hmm. But it's clearly a great experience, and it's certainly a great experience for someone who like loves like action is their thing. There's some really inventive stuff going on. Mm-hmm. So yeah.
Yep. Danae Hughes.
Oh, we're skipping you.
Well, yeah, for now.
For now. Okay.
But
okay.
You wrote a ton of notes apparently.
Oh gosh, this movie. Well, I will forget movies quickly, so if I don't write while I'm watching, it just leaves my mind. So the entire movie I was writing, and this is a long movie, so there was a lot of writing. But yeah, this is my most favorite John Wick and my least favorite John Wick, because I've never watched a John Wick movie until now.
It's very fair.
So that's very confusing. I was very confused. I didn't know about the Kevlar suits. So I was just like,
"Oh, this must have been so confusing for you."
I didn't know about the world. I didn't understand. Like, you can piece together. So the question for me going in was, does this movie quote unquote stand alone in the way that they're telling an independent story that someone can jump into if they've forgotten things from the first three? But I think the best way that I would describe this experience was if you decided that you were going to go hang out with your buddies and watch someone play a video game from the beginning to the end with like boss fights and shit, that's what this movie was like. So it was to me like watching Twitch with my friends for several hours. And it did have boss fights and it had cutscenes. And it was like even the cheesy video game stuff where they have the cutscene and like your character talks and it just says, "Yeah." And that's all you need it to be, because you don't care what they're saying. You just want to get to the poker boss fight.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was an interesting thing for me. I was disappointed a couple times because I missed something and the audience laughed. Because I was like, you know, I'm like thinking, okay, I'm going to write this down. And there's this one moment, my favorite part was like, I heard Jeremy crack up laughing. And I had to ask Aaron and Ian about it in the car later because I missed it. But I didn't expect this movie to have like the funny parts of murder going on.
Yep.
But there was a couple things that happened where I guess it was like the punching bag and like the wind up sort of like cartoony punch stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And then when John Wick like rolls down the stairs, down the stairs, down. Like, mm-hmm. And it just, because it's so long, it really lived in some shots that were really interesting in a, like, murdery fun way. And the other thing that I would say that I did really enjoy was it was fucking beautiful to look mm-hmm. at. We were all over the place. We went to different places, different seasons, different countries. And even though I could sin the fuck out of this movie, because there's an entire room dedicated to, like, square lights for some reason. Mm-hmm. But when we go back into the square light room for the fight scene, you're like, this is fucking cool. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of interesting. So, yeah, I think overall I had a really good time, and I only checked my watch 4 times. Which was surprising because I thought it was going to be a drag.
Yeah, okay. Jonathan Watkins.
I like to go by his birth name, Jonathan Wick.
Yep.
No reason.
Yep.
No reason at all. is that how he always says, Ian McShane always addresses him as Jonathan? I didn't remember that.
He says it a lot.
Okay. That's weird. I didn't remember that. So I liked it. One thing, when Aaron bringing up the guns, though, were you the one telling me that the director said they weren't using, like, blanks?
What he said is there's no reason any Hollywood production should use any real guns.
Which, as close as they were to people, I don't know how they... So I just, because of what you said, I just started picturing them all just, like, while they, like, when they did, before all the sound effects and stuff, they were just, like, going, pew, 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 because it was just, like, silent clicks or something. No, I really enjoyed it. I thought this was some of the best action I've seen in an American movie in a long time. Maybe since the last John Wick movie, I don't know. Really like the supporting cast. I think even though John Wick 3 is not my favorite John Wick, I think Mark Dacascos? I don't know how to say that name, but he's like probably my favorite supporting character that's been in one of these movies.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought there were quite a few in this one that at least were on par with him. I loved Skarsgård, and I really enjoyed the guy who played Mr. Nobody. I don't remember his name, and I don't think
he's great.
I don't think I've, huh?
He was great.
Yeah, he was great.
Yeah, it's Shamir Anderson.
Yeah, and I looked him up, and I mean, he's been in a lot of movies I want to see, but I don't think I've actually seen him in anything before this. He was great. I love the dog. Love the dog.
Yeah.
Maybe the best dog since The Mask, which is the last movie I remember that had a dog. It was really good. I mean, if we're just kind of talking about our general reactions, yeah, I thought it was a lot of fun. I can't do the immediate ranking like Aaron can. I don't have that power. It's you know, they're all good movies. So and this is just another one.
Jeremy Scott.
When they do that extended shot from above, abandoned warehouse, apartment building.
Oh yeah.
That blew my goddamn mind.
Mm-hmm. Chris was like, oh, or something. Mm-hmm. Like, it
I was literally doing this, like trying to keep myself in my seat because that was exhilarating. And the fact that it kept going, because I thought, oh, this is a great shot. Too bad it's going to end in 10 seconds. And it doesn't. It keeps going.
And it goes back to it and does it again. And it goes
back to it again later. That's some of the coolest shit I've seen in years.
Mm-hmm.
I still think I like 3 more than this one. I think the action was a little more inventive. In this one, the action is immaculate, but it's more brutal, repetitive, more about the waves of people he has to fight over and over and over than it is. Like in the third one, we get that weapons museum where he's got all these different knives he's throwing and all these different, he has to put gun parts together to fire a single shot. And there's nothing quite that clever in this one, but it feels like they're just at the top of their game in terms of, like Jonathan said, it's one of the best action films I've seen in a really long time. Mm-hmm. I do want to point out, I hope this movie does not start a trend of jazzing up our subtitles. Like, when the guy speaks Mandarin and you want to put words on the screen to tell me what he's saying, just put words on the screen to tell me what he's saying. I don't need the last word that he emphasized to be red and larger in font to know that he emphasized it. I was watching when he spoke. I just didn't know what he said. Just give me the words. I found that very distracting. Even the font they used for the subtitles I thought was stylized instead of being designed to be read easily.
The other movies do that too, right? That's a John Wick thing, right?
Yeah, it's a John Wick thing. I felt like this one was a little bit more egregious, but that may have been because there was more non-English dialogue. And Donnie Yen killed it. Sorry, Donnie Yen is my boy. He's great. And I could not be happier with how they used him in this movie.
Yeah. Donnie Yen was one of the biggest highlights for me. This whole the way his character is, the way he plays it. I'm like, I was like, kind of like almost secretly wishing it would be his movie during it. Even though I love Keanu Reeves and I love John Wick and everything, when he shows up and he starts doing his stuff, I'm like, man, you could just make a whole movie out of this, right? I mean, I wouldn't mind it just being like a convergence of John Wick and Eat Man, like all in the one and everything. I loved everything about how they used him, except for the fact that I'm kind of with Aaron a little bit on this movie, not for the same reasons, I don't think. It's hard not to think of John Wick 3 during this. And John Wick 3 had so many things in it that he did that was like, wow, they did this and they got him in this situation and he used all this stuff. And this is a lot of gunsy knivesy. And the action is well staged as always. No doubt about it. The action is very well done.
There's some arrows at the beginning, but then after that, there's
nunchucks.
But nunchucks.
Well, that's the thing. That's the thing. That's another thing, though. They introduce this awesome bow and arrow thing that slams people up against walls and stuff, and we see that maybe once. The entire time, you're like, don't you think you should get John Wick in on some of that bow and arrow action? Instead, he's still doing this, you know.
Well, and
you know,
the nunchucks are cool, but I don't need to see him hit 35 people in the head with nunchucks. Like, five would have done the trick for me. And that scene just went
my
on.
Nunchuck limit, guys.
Guys kept running at him, and he would. And I was like, okay.
And I mean, it's
kind of got the point.
Yeah, I felt the same way during that whole thing. And this, and when I start off negative, it makes it sound like I hate this movie or I dislike this. I really love this movie, but man, there's a lot of that kind of thing going on where they'll bring up something really inventive. Like Donnie Yen has that part where he puts up those little doorbell things all over the place so that he knows where everybody is.
Never does it again.
And never does it again. And he somehow has like the unbelievable like daredevil sensibility, you know.
Yeah,
senses.
Yeah, he's like a superhero.
He knows what cards were dealt to him.
Yeah, he knows what cards were dealt to him.
But that's the thing. It's like, so then that almost negates the doorbell thing, right? It's like it's a cool idea, but did he need that?
Doesn't sound like he does.
No.
Yeah. So
I mean, I was a little disappointed that the whole thing came down to a 30 paces duel.
Yeah. Same.
Like. I recognize that we're trying to do this like historic, the table has these rules from the old world or what have you, but like, and I know the movie gave us that staircase sequence right before that, and that's supposed to feed my big action like hunger, but when they paced off and turned and they go to this wide shot, I'm like, this is really how we're going to do this? Mm-hmm. And I mean, I actually thought the ending's pretty poetic. I'm pretty happy that they ended it the way they did.
Yeah.
I think it took balls to do that, but I know John Wick and Donnie Yen fought in the square glass light box room in the early part of the movie. But man, I just kept thinking that they're gonna fight. They're gonna fight at the end. It's gonna be Ip Man and John, and that's not. Mm-hmm. It's just a pistol thing.
Yeah,
but it's very intentional because I think story wise, the fact that the stairway scene becomes the two of them fighting together.
Yes.
Is a little unique twist on our expectations, right? It subverts our expectations in some way because we're all thinking, oh, these two guys, the final battle is going to be them going against each other. And instead, the final battle is them working together to get to the place where they face off in a more, you know, serene way with the thing. So it subverts those expectations, I think, purposefully.
Yeah.
Whether or not it works, you know.
I mean, the payoff of that's fun though. You know, he didn't shoot. I don't know. I thought that was a cool payoff.
No, that was all some bullshit. I had some issues with that. I was like, no, those rules weren't specified. And so why didn't he just shoot Bill Skarsgård? Why didn't he just shoot him straight away? Or why didn't neither of them would have to shoot? He just turned, and why is Donnie Yen still alive? Because he's the number two, so shouldn't he be dead because he lost the duel? But we like this movie. Stop sending it, Ian.
There's definitely going to be sense. I mean, there isn't any movie.
Well, I don't think the whole he didn't shoot thing was like had anything to do with rules. I think that just like once he stepped into the duel, like he was part of the target. So it's like he just distracted him long enough for John to pick up the gun and shoot him. Like he, that could have, he couldn't shoot Skarsgård until he was part of,
because they just would have replaced him. That's what the woman said. So you, if he did a duel though, that they have a, like a hierarchy and they, you know,
but shouldn't that still get Donnie Yen dead?
Well, I don't know.
If he's the number two. Was that just a condition of the other?
I think there was a separate agreement that he had already fulfilled and was therefore free. In fact, I think, don't they say that before the coup de grace?
Yeah, he does.
I think they even set him free before the coup de
grace. Oh, okay.
But there
I retract my sin.
I do love that part where just before the duel, Bill Skarsgård, who's been talking about this dude's daughter the entire movie.
Oh my God.
he's like, just as soon as he's like, your daughter, fuck you. You know?
So good.
What were you going to say?
Oh, I was just going to say that was a thing for the whole movie for me. But again, I know I'm a weird one that didn't see any of the previous ones, but I felt like the rules of their universe were confusing in and of the movie itself. Like, if there's a sanctioned duel, but then they take a hit out on John Wick so he can't get to the duel, wouldn't that in and of itself mean that the person who has agreed to the duel is going against the rules?
Yes.
That seems sketchy.
It just and then they're all hanging out at the top of the stairs and they're invested. The guy who's his, who's John Wick's second, who will die if John Wick doesn't show up, is just sitting there scratching his balls, watching the sun come up in Paris. Like, get the fucking gun and go help your dude. Like, you know what I mean? It was weird. I'm like, what's going on? Why are we all so chill about just, like, right over the edge over here, there's this battle going on, and isn't that against the rules? But then the rules were just, in general, kind of confusing.
So you're asking why the hotel manager didn't go help him fight?
Okay. Yeah.
This movie is just like Need for Speed, and let me tell you why. Well, I mean, it is. I mean, there's a point where, like, Aaron Paul is going to go to this race, and the other guy is like, sends a whole bunch of people after him so they can't make the race and stuff like that. So, like, you know, but anyway, that was our Need for Speed hour.
That's also a movie that where a hero goes on a journey, according to Chris. If you get that, if you get that category in blockbuster game.
Yeah. The other thing that I didn't like about this movie that I loved was every time John Wick is in a battle of some sort, and it's like hand to hand, one guy, and it's like, okay, this is cool. One guy, he's battling this one guy. That's awesome. This is really good action. After he beats that guy, what happens? Two other people show up. What the fuck were these assholes doing the whole time? What were they, where were they in this whole thing? They've sent a whole bunch of people after John Wick. So what are they doing? Are they like stuck in the stairwell?
Washing their tights.
I mean, they're washing their tights.
It's the whole thing with this series, though, right? Like, I mean, every single human being in Paris is an assassin, and yet they all take their turns. Like, I don't know how you do it otherwise. Like, I just think it's like an inherent sin of this kind of filmmaking. But I mean, it is throughout the Waiten attack is throughout the movie. Yeah,
yeah.
For sure.
My issue was the people still partying. Yeah.
That's also a John Wick staple, though.
Yeah. Like, oblivious.
The obliviousness of the crowd to the death around them.
That's what he does to you, man.
Yeah. I knew this.
There's a lot of cocaine in the 2020s.
The part that actually annoyed me was that they were all running out afterwards. It's like all of a sudden at once they decided, oh, it's scary.
And they all left. Like they decided finally that
the nunchucks were too far.
This has gone on just long enough.
He took that man's tooth out. I'm out.
I did love it just for the action. The way they set the camera up is really awesome, and I think there's just sort of a different. I don't know. Maybe you guys know out there. Is there something? There's not. It's not low angle. It's like mid angle or something.
Mm. Oh, they just hold the damn thing still so you can see the action. Yeah. That's the beauty of it.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's what's amazing is like if we actually did action well in the U.S. with these movies most of the time, this would be like maybe average, but because we see so many crappy ones, this is like, oh my God, this is amazing, you know? So, like, I don't know.
I saw that guy get kicked in the nuts. It was great.
Right.
I feel like there were a couple of times that I felt like I could see, like, the extras in a fight scene, like, hesitating before they got to Wick to let him beat up the other guy. Yeah. And I think when you ratchet up the action this high, you're bound to open yourself up to that. Like, I saw several times where somebody was like getting up from a punch and And it's just the time that Wick needs to dispatch of the other guy.
Yeah. Yep.
There's one thing I really want to talk about to see if I'm the only one that thought this, but the Arc de Triomphe scene, most of those cars were fake, right?
Digital? I wondered that as well.
I thought the whole thing was faked. I thought they probably shot that in the Mandalorian circular studio.
Right, and then they just CGI'd
but
in the
I
arc.
Saw cars that were stopping, not as though they slammed on their brakes, but as though a computer just made them stop.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, and there, I don't think there's any way you can shoot. It's staged really well, but I don't think there's any way you can shoot that scene with real cars.
Well, I saw in the credits it said Arc de Triomphe scene by ChatGPT, so okay. I don't know.
All right, that's what I figured. I mean, I was pulled out of that scene by trying, like, my brain was like, there's no way they did this, and then I started looking for which cars looked CG and which cars looked real, and I think most of them were fake, and that's fine. It's a cool...
joining the show.
It's a cool scene. Train break.
Train break.
But again, I think when you feel compelled to top yourself, you set yourself up for cracks to be exposed, which is kind of why I'm glad they ended it the way they did, because now they can do these one-off, they can make their universe, and it doesn't have to be Wick, so they don't have to actually top this one with the action next time.
And I think you left before the final credit scene.
I left before the final credit scene.
So, oh, yeah. Can I tell you something?
Yeah, go for it.
I guessed the final credit scene.
Really?
I did. I have witnesses that will attest.
Oh, nice. I think I heard something like, I told you, or some shit like that.
Yeah. I was definitely peacocking.
Chris's theory that it was going to be like Carrie was my favorite, though. I was very sad when it wasn't like Carrie.
Yeah, you know, with John Wick's hand coming out of the grave. Like, yeah.
Do you know what the end
was? No, I'm hoping somebody will tell me what happened.
It was the daughter who wanted to kill the blind guy, Kane.
Okay.
Because he killed her dad.
He said, I'll be waiting for you.
And he said, I'll be waiting for you.
The concierge at the Osaka Internet. Yes. Yeah.
So he shows up with some flowers, and his daughter's playing the violin, and in the crowd comes, what's her name? I can't remember her name. Akita? And she has like a little knife, and she's coming at him in the crowd. Nice. And then it just cuts away.
But then it cuts away before Donnie Yen probably dispatches.
Well, there are
really
at least two planned spinoffs, both female-focused. So one might be her.
Yeah.
And there's like a Continental TV series or something.
Yeah, they're making a show about the frickin' Continental, and then there's something, the Ballerina is the name of one of them.
Yeah, that's right.
I think Ana de Armas is in that one. Mm. Anyway.
It was strange too, because like on the perimeter of the screen, it was hazy, as if it was sort of looking through.
Almost like a dream or
a
something.
A dream-like sequence.
It was weird.
So I'm sure that if it is something that appears in the spinoff, that it might be a memory, a flashback, a dream, something like that. So
the future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Is Ian McShane going to be in that Continental series?
He has to be, but yeah, almost I know to be, right? Keanu's going to be in the Ballerina, but so that'll probably be takes place in the past.
Yeah. I still think that the way they did that ending, they could still easily bring back John Wick if they wanted
completely.
To.
I mean,
because they're like, what do you think he is, heaven or hell? And that could mean anything, really.
Yep.
You know, it could heaven could be, I don't know,
freedom.
Canada.
Yeah. I mean, as soon as he said what he wanted on his tombstone, I knew he was going to die at the end of the movie. That's just Chekhov's tombstone.
Right. It sure is.
But yeah, they can bring him back. They brought him back after the third one when he was shot off the roof of a building just because they had a scene at the end where he was still alive. They can do whatever they want.
I just hope this doesn't become like fucking Saw, though, where like, you know, they killed off Jigsaw in the third one and found all these ridiculous ways to have him in the story.
Yeah. No, there's the Book of Wick, and there's somebody who like becomes an assassin from it, you know?
Or they cut back to this random scene in one of the John Wick movies. Some dude's over here in the corner.
Yeah.
By the way, this might just be a me thing. You mentioned the hotel. Hotels are like some of the least interesting places to me. And it always kind of irritates me when hotels like really like try to jazz it up. Because like you're a fucking hotel. But The John Wick movies have like the coolest, like they actually make hotels cool. That's a hard thing to do.
Mm-hmm. Their set design, you talk about, Jeremy, you're talking about like one-upping and like the, okay, we just had this epic scene. What's the next epic scene? And they just keep getting more and more and more in these interesting ways or whatever. It was like that too with some of the, just these shots of, for example, we cut over and Marquis is talking to, I don't even remember who, and we're in a horse stable, and they're like these women doing sword play choreographed on the horses. Yes. And I'm like, what is happening? But then it was like just the next level. Everything with Marquis was this like opulent thing. It really just loved to spend time doing the most unexpected next huge thing. Even so much as to sort of be like, yeah, we know this is a 3-hour movie, but we're going to go ahead and watch this guy walk across an art gallery for 45 minutes.
I was wondering about, I love Bill Skarsgård. Mm-hmm. Okay, so is his French accent terrible?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Or is it so good? But and I've heard so many bad ones that this one.
Remember we had that director? This is a British guy. Remember we had that director that was talking about a Keanu Reeves accent in Bram Stoker's Dracula was actually good?
Oh yeah.
He's like, no, I have a lot of people I know that talk like that.
Yeah. So yeah, like, I wonder, Ian, do you know?
I was gonna say, for the podcast listeners, Chris is just looking at Ian, the Brit, me, yeah. And I am not going to go on record as judging a French accent.
Okay.
However, I liked it better. If I was to rank it on a scale, it's somewhere between Safin in No Time to Die and John Malkovich in Johnny English.
Okay.
It's somewhere between that. Okay. I really, really liked it. I'm not going to say it was authentic.
To be fair, this is kind of supposed to be cartoonish, comic booky. I mean, I think it fits in this world.
Okay.
I think it totally fits, in my opinion.
That shot where Bill Skarsgård, when he first shows up, and there's all the sunlight going through the windows and the blinds, that's such a great shot. It's such an amazing
shot.
And they keep cutting to that sand, the hourglass.
Who cleans it?
I don't know.
That's a really tall blind.
Yeah, we don't think about those guys enough.
Oh, yeah, no.
I also love how the John Wick movies bring all these, maybe either known for action more overseas or they're known for movies that don't get a huge release or they're direct to streaming or whatever. Because you had like Marco Zerwar played the Frenchman. He was the Frenchman, right? Skarsgård? Is that what he was? Mm-hmm. Something like that. Skarsgård, he played like his right-hand man. He's been in a bunch of other smaller movies like that are really cool action movies. And then obviously, a friend of the podcast, Scott Adkins.
Yeah.
A friend of an older podcast,
we were trying to figure out who he was.
Yeah, he's the big guy at the Dealing Poker. They put a lot of prosthetics.
Dealing Poker. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Well, I was wondering because I was like, they had to have like put some bunch of makeup on this dude. And that was another thing. I was like, why is this guy such a badass?
Yeah,
like,
man.
John Wick was like having a real trouble with him.
Yeah, they made him almost like a kingpin. Like
I loved that.
And Aaron
so
mentioned
much
last night, because Aaron interviewed him. I wasn't on that one. And he was talking about, he was filming John Wick 4 at that time, right?
Trying to remember.
That was a couple years ago.
I should have gone back and listened, but in my mind, I will make this up, and so we'll say it's true. We asked him about John Wick, and he gave like an answer like, well, I can't really say anything about it, but the part may be bigger than you expect.
Oh, yeah.
Or something
he did
like
say
that.
Something like that.
Yeah,
yes.
So like,
yes.
Oh,
our good friend Scott Adkins.
Yeah, exactly. I was getting Colin Farrell and the Batman vibes on that.
Oh, sure. And then Donnie Yen falls in that, too. I mean, I think more people know Donnie Yen. He's been in the Star Wars universe and stuff like that, but, you know, he definitely doesn't get in enough movies. Mm-hmm. I hope maybe this will get him more, like,
You would think. Something that entertaining and beautiful to watch. Like every time he's on screen, I'm smiling. Like,
oh
that's,
yeah,
this
he's
is
amazing. He was my favorite character.
I got the sense that all of you out there were enjoying this movie. The reason why I got that sense was we had the bingo thing.
Oh yeah.
Which, by the way,
do we have one of those up here?
No.
All right.
Probably not.
You can access it though on your smart device.
The bingo is a bone of contention with me because some of you guys are marking things I don't know if I agree with a lot of time. But
are we going to talk about the free space?
No, we're not.
Well, I did want to talk about the free space, but let Chris talk about what he wants
to
do first.
But what I was getting, like when we did Ambulance last year, it seemed like everybody kept looking at their bingo thing and like trying to find because ambulance was so bad, certainly something was going on that could get on the bingo card. This one, I don't think I heard a rustling at all.
I know.
The theater was silent for the most part.
The first time the wife was mentioned, I heard some rustling because of the wife, you know, wife mentioning of the wife square. That was the only time I was aware of the bingo cards was when that happened.
I liked how we had a square for John Wick gets hit by a car, and then in the Arc de Triomphe scene, he gets hit by like five cars.
Yep.
Yep. That's
automatic. You wanted to talk about the center square?
Well, center square, there was one time
John
in the movie...
John Wick survives this?
There was one time in the movie where he falls like three stories onto a car on his head or something.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And I just went, center square. Mm. And it got me thinking, like, what is the most John Wick survives this moment of the series? Like, if you... Oh, no. Like, in your mind... What is the most ridiculous thing he survived? It might be that fall.
I think it is, because my immediate thought was, this is a very strange place to kill off John Wick. And then he stands up.
Yeah.
Well, you guys are
checks his watch.
Yes. He was shot and fell off a roof at the end of the third movie.
But we don't see it, right? So like he could have maybe fallen into like a... Like one of those, what
he
are
was
they
more
calling?
Than three stories no, high.
He hits several things and then hits the pavement. You see it all there.
Honestly, I think the stairs in this movie is the most egregious because he goes down five sections of concrete stairs. Just, and I get the joke. It's funny. And I know that John Wick is not the real world, but give me a fucking break. Like, and then he does it again. He gets kicked down two more flights of stairs after that.
Literally, at least give him one break. Yeah.
Break a bone. Give me something. Like, he can't just stand up and go, oh, boy, that was rough.
He should at least stand up and look at his pinky and it's pointing sideways or something.
By the way, the knife in the hand scene on Mr. Nobody, which I did turn my face when he was pulling his hand out. But then what was even worse was Bill Skarsgård shaking that hand.
Oh, my God.
You heard, like, that squish. Yeah. Or whatever. Oh, my God.
John Wick falling down the stairs just kept reminding me of from The Simpsons. Who's the... Krusty Clown sidekick that keeps stepping on the rakes.
Oh, Sideshow Bob.
Sideshow Bob just stepping on the rakes over and over again. I just wanted Wick to stand up and go,
yeah. But it felt like a video game to me, like you got a new life, right? Like you fall all the way down, then you got to start again.
It is a video
again.
Game. Yeah. Like they're going to make, if they don't already, are there John Wick video games yet? There will be.
They're dumb
and
if they're not working
will
on it.
Be, like, that's the next thing, right? They're going to have to release the John Wick video game so you can play those scenes from your own first-person shooter, because I think people would love to be like, yeah, here comes the Poker King scene, and they would love that. But to go back to your card, my question is, I mean, he has survived a lot. I'm getting that. But, like, in this movie, he survives a ton. But did he... Does do our people get to actually say that John Wick survives this after this movie?
Yeah. I mean, no, you don't. You can't because
he didn't survive.
Because the things that it's not about whether or not he dies by the end of it. It's about what kills him
during
or not during.
Okay, so then it's the four story fall onto the side of a
van. In the end, he got shot three times. That's what kills him. The other things that should have killed him
didn't.
Yeah,
So you should get your free space.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you definitely get the free space. Some of this stuff, bullshit. No way. No fucking way, guys.
Why are the white shirts not lined with Kevlar?
Because it's a duel to the death.
Yeah, they had to strip the Kevlar off for the duel.
No, but the white shirts themselves, why don't they have Kevlar built into the lining?
So that they could be wearing a shirt during the duel. Duh.
Sin.
You're talking about the entire movie, though, because that's why
stretched the limitations of Kevlar to ridiculous. Like, Kevlar just becomes like Captain America's shield. Right. There's so many times he's like, oh, you can't get me a hell of a jacket.
Strangely, I was like, okay with that. Like, it's like, oh, it's just some new technology that they're using. It's a movie, blah, blah, blah. But yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. They might as well just like cover themselves, their faces in it.
They're trying to get all the gunplay in, and you can't do that if you don't have some natural defense, like, oh, my suit is made of Kevlar.
Yeah.
But they stretched the
belt. No one should have hearing at the end of this either, because all the guns are going off like right here.
Yeah.
You know?
It was a lot.
I'm always blown away by the bad guys in the full body suits. Like,
by the way, whatever that design,
Kevlar three-piece suits, but not Kevlar face guards and helmets and
they had like a skull thing in the face.
Yeah, they had to get like underneath the mask.
Yeah,
that was a super cool design.
It took like why isn't there a Kevlar neck guard? Like, I mean, if you
you can turn your neck.
Yes. you have to be able to breathe.
Those suits move fine. There's no restriction from the Kevlar.
I like that there's a square too. Is there one like walks out of the rain or something like that? And that actually doesn't happen, but he does walk out of a fucking like waterfall. Like, I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, no, there's
like,
a waterfall.
We should have just put water.
Yeah, just water. Okay. I also thought it was interesting too to think like this must have been a choreographer's dream. Like the body stunts that are going on, like the stunt crews that got to work on this, because you know that in the scene with the square light room fight at the hotel, when the guys were in the body suits, mm-hmm. you're talking about. They're the same guys on the stairs. You know, these are the same people just doing different scenes, and they're just the same crew just doing thing after thing after thing. And it was really interesting to think about after a while, mm-hmm. because they did last so long, like you said, Jeremy, where I'm like, wow, we're going to watch 17 more people get bonked on the head and get worn down by this nunchuck. So that gives you time to sit and think like, God, I wonder how sore they are after shooting stuff like this.
Well, I doubt you'll ever go back and watch the first John Wick, but they had such a low budget for that movie. There are scenes where he's going through a house or a dance club and he's beating the shit out of people. And those stunt people were then standing up off camera, running around and presenting as a different henchman.
Really?
And they did that multiple times in the first movie. It's pretty impressive.
That's really interesting.
Is the same director been on four of them?
I think the first one had co-directors.
Okay.
And then this guy has done the other three.
Right? I mean, he's like a stunt
guy. He originally was a stunt guy.
Yeah. Maybe this is a wrong place to ask this question, but how much is Keanu doing himself in these? Like, do we know that stuff?
You'd be surprised.
I understand is like 95% or something like that, and then only when he's getting hit by cars and stuff. That's
right,
when
of course.
He's not.
In the third one, the director said, make a list of everything you know how to do. And he did, like, I can ride a horse. So they rode a horse into the third movie.
They did! Oh my God! The horse scene is like what opens it up. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
There's a whole thing, a whole video from this YouTube channel that I watch called Fact Fiend that went through this whole thing. They basically said Keanu Reeves could be an assassin if he wanted to be. Like, no, for real. Like, he knows all the...
He's like a Tom Cruise of his own stunts.
People who are weapons experts say he does everything right as far as, like, reloading the gun and, like, making sure his gun's loaded. And when it jams, it's like, you know, he like, all these different things that he does in the movie, they're like, okay, that's pretty fucking impressive. So
that kind of makes sense where when he gets a special gun at the end, where they have this, like, moment where he's, like, checking everything. Because then all of the gun nerds are like, yep, that's the right way to do that. Where I'm just
I like how Lawrence Fisher made a huge point to be like, it's got 21 shots.
I still think he shot more than 21 bullets per minute. I thought it was funny that they put a whole scene in. This is a special gun. It holds 20 bullets. And then he shoots 50 times before he changes the magazine.
Let's do the math, because I know they take a lot of pride in the reloading in these movies. Like,
I understand when people do the math, though. You take the sin out, so I'm not.
Absolutely.
He would also put the gun away, pick up someone else's gun.
He did that, though.
I love that detail.
In that overhead shot scene where it's going,
he's got the flamey thing. Yes. That's amazing. He doesn't even blink. The first time he fires it, he should be like, "Wow, that's fucking cool." But then he's just like, "Yeah, expected." Like,
yeah, that's basically where guns are nowadays. At least they shoot flame. Why not?
Glad this didn't hit me once.
How many cuts do we think they had
in that shot? Yeah,
because that overhead shot plays like a one cut.
Yeah,
but because they're going past walls of different rooms, I'm sure they made cuts. Mm-hmm. But I also know this team prides themselves on elaborate action. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some long-ass takes in that.
Yeah, I think it's one. And I think they went through and they just practiced a lot before they had the stuff going off. Because there's this one moment where the camera is sort of pulling back towards us and we're heading kind of maybe into a hallway and we're watching John Wick. And they're just like this little pea-sized John Wick. And like the little pea-sized bad guys, and it's just this like dollhouse, essentially. Yeah. It's so neat.
Well, and I just keep thinking too, like all the stuff that happens in that shot. Like, I've seen that movie where they're of course they're shooting it down regular level, like they do in 99% of the movie, and all of it is like because they're behind walls and behind their whatever. It's like, you know. here's a guy shooting, wall explodes, guy reacts. Yeah. Well, you know, it's like all that. And in this, we're just seeing all of it all at once, which is amazing.
And the advantage of that is that you get to see this one guy get shot, catches fire, runs around, and the poor bastard meets John Wick again and gets shot. Yes. My dude, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. And I think like those, you can maybe see that it wasn't, they had more time, but that first initial one where we just stay on that overhead shot, which like it must be drone, right? Because it starts off and we're normal shot, and then it starts to back up and shift, and then all of a sudden we're like in bird's eye. That was one of the coolest things I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, for real.
And then when it was pulling back and they start to go in the hallway, that's when we've got the explosions coming through the walls. And I just was thinking, they probably practiced this, vocalizing it, like, 3, 2, 1, and then, like, so it's choreographed really beautifully. But I think it was in the, okay, this is the money shot, they'd practiced it so much. I wouldn't be surprised if it was a one shot on that initial one.
Did they need Lawrence Fishburne in this? Did they use him well at all? Because I feel like
I don't think so.
It was just like, oh, he has a speech in the opening, are you ready?
Yeah,
and then he
host.
Provides a boat. And otherwise,
and then he moves to France out of nowhere. Like, it looks like he moved all of his stuff too, right into the subway station. All these paintings and shit are in there. Like, he's like, I decided to expand, and you're like, okay.
Yeah, I thought you were the king of like one of the boroughs. Like, what are you doing in Paris?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. All right, we usually get to the secret double feature at this point, but I think we're going to bring it to the audience, are we not? Are we going to, or do we want to see what we came up with?
Well, as far as the secret double feature goes, I was going to say probably whoever on the panel has a choice that they think.
Did anybody come up with a secret double feature for this?
I have one I could start off with if nobody.
Okay.
I mean, I think Hamilton is the perfect secret double feature for this movie.
Yeah.
Beyond the duel, there are a lot of the same themes about loss and family and revenge and what it means and throwing away your shot. Like, I mean, it's like it almost feels like a Hamilton remake in some ways.
I like this a lot. Yeah.
So Hamilton, I think, would be a good super secret double feature.
If you guys didn't come up with one, that's fine. Is there anybody else that has one?
I mean, John Wick 3.
Yeah. Why not?
I mean, Dark Crystal, because it rocks.
Dark Crystal,
No, I was thinking like, something like, I don't know, I'm starting to think of something like a little, almost even sillier, just because that would kind of like, you could kind of go into that. So I was thinking something like Machete, maybe, you know?
Yeah.
And more people should watch Machete anyways, but not Machete Kills, just Machete. But yeah, something like that. That was what popped in my mind. Or Hot Shots Part 2.
Hot Shots Part 2,
Grand Budapest Hotel.
Yeah, absolutely.
Random one.
There's a lot of feelings of loss in Grand Budapest Hotel.
I think that Pig would be a good double feature.
Yeah,
Pig?
Yeah, okay. All right, I get that.
That wasn't a joke.
I was
absolutely serious. What's funny is when Pig came out, though, people did refer to John Wick. Is this where you were getting that? Yeah, and that, which was kind of a bad thing for it, because I heard a lot of people went and saw it, and they were like, well, that was only John Wick. But yeah, it kind of is, but it's just not in the way, it's not nonstop action. It's a different.
Where's my pick?
You get the struggles. You're getting this like these like very emotional internal struggles, but you see it play out very, very differently.
Yeah.
And
it's revenge.
Really cool.
Well, and I have a sneaking suspicion Pig was even more like John Wick in its original formatting, because like we mentioned jokingly when we talked about it in the other podcast, the Top Chef Fight Club scene or whatever.
Yeah.
That's very much a John Wick style world building thing where it's like, oh, this underground thing exists. And so, yeah, I think there was a little bit of that intent with that movie. And then it just kind of, they kind of sanded a lot of that off and just made it, you know, a little bit more of a straight drama. But
I think I would go with Arnold Schwarzenegger's Eraser.
Oh,
as
yeah.
my secret double feature.
Yeah.
There's some subtle things. And just watch Eraser again, because not enough people have seen it.
I think you're the biggest fan of Eraser that I've ever
seen. Oh, easily. There's five of us, and I beat up the other four.
No, I like it. I do dig Eraser. That's one of his last good movies.
And, are we talking about the Schwarzenegger Eraser?
Yeah.
Is that what we're talking about?
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay, look, it's not the mask, but it's good.
I think my real answer might be Kill Bill, because I'm correlating all the action. Mm-hmm. And it was one of my favorite ones to see. Like, if I'm going to watch violence, like people dying violently, when it looks that beautiful, it's kind of like, wow, it's like an art form to murder. And there's a moment when there's the standoff between Kane and then the father figure, kind of towards the beginning, where they're doing the sword fight. And it was just like this one jab. And I was like, oh, yeah, I remember. Mm-hmm. I remember seeing that in Kill Bill. But that was, yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm gonna, that revenge arc, because there's that little girl that comes home and sees that Beatrix has, like, killed the mother. And she says, I understand if you're going to want to come kill me later. And we're still waiting for that movie. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've always wanted to see that movie.
Yeah.
Like, guys, if you ever feel raw about it, you want to come back. I'm like, they were thinking about it, or rumored to be thinking about it.
Now it makes sense.
Now he's making his very last movie, apparently.
So. Okay.
Anyway.
The Pauline Kael story.
Yeah, exactly.
Star Trek 4.
Well, my secret double feature is Joker, no further context needed. I was going to sort of reach out to the audience and kind of figure out what they may have said. We'll just say them out over on the microphone or whatever. Anybody got a double feature? The Raid, for sure. Yeah. Shoot 'em up, for sure. I love Shoot 'em up, yeah.
You guys, I mean, just for the gunplay, you could pair it up with Equilibrium.
Although, yeah.
I don't think enough people have seen that movie to know what I'm talking
about.
Oh my
gosh, we need to big recommend Equilibrium somewhere.
We do. We do. It's my only problem with that movie is it's totally like a Fahrenheit 451 knockoff in terms of its like main plot, but the action is so freaking rad.
Yeah,
they use guns like swords.
Yeah,
it's not unlike anything I've ever seen.
There's a new Children of the Corn movie out right now, and Kurt Wemmer fucking directed that.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think Ultraviolet screwed him, because I think that was like his big budget movie after Equilibrium, and then it bombed.
Yeah.
So yeah, he's directing Children of the Corn movies.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. Well, thank you so much for listening to us. I'm going to tell you what the next week one is. It's my turn.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to do something a little bit different for next week. I'm going to give you two, but don't worry. It's still going to be only an hour long. Two shorts, Charlie Chaplin. I'm going to start with a sort of a series of my own. I haven't gone to Jeremy and said, hey, let's do a series. I'm going to do a series of my own. I'm going to take comedies from different decades and get all the way up to our current thing. So this is in the 1910s. Charlie Chaplin's The Immigrant and A Dog's Life. That's your homework for next week. Those movies are both on HBO Max, I believe. If you can find them, you can probably rent them on Amazon. That's the homework for next week. We'll be talking about Charlie Chaplin stuff. I'll be very interested to see how we do our double feature on that.
You screwed me. But for those of you who want to watch along in the chat live when we record, remember that will be Tuesday, 3 days from now. So you have 3 days to watch these two shorts if you want to join that discussion, or you don't have to. You can join the discussion and be clueless. But
when you get to the aughts, are you going to do Serving Sarah? I really, okay, good.
Yeah, Serving Sarah is going to be or Chasing Liberty, one of those.
Yeah, Chasing Liberty.
Excess Baggage.
Yeah. Excess Baggage, yes, absolutely. It's like an uncovered gem, that Excess Baggage from the 90s. But anyway, we'd like to thank you, thank chat, thank everybody who watched us live. We'll see you next time. See ya.
Bye.
Find your dad.
Bus.
'Be a part of the live show by being a member of the Sin Club at Patreon at patreon.com/cinemasins. Chat with us on the CinemaSins Discord at discord.gg/cinemasins or CinemaSins Twitter at CinemaSins, and email any comments or questions to recotopia@cinemasins.com. That's recotopia@cinemasins.com.